If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi, Stacey Cole, and Todd Michaels.
On July 6, 2024, a woman named Sonia Massey did what any of us might do if we thought someone was lurking outside her home. She called 911 for help. But instead of safety, what walked through her front door was tragedy. Moments later, Sonia was dead, shot by the very deputy who came to protect her, and I'll put protect in air quotes for those of you listening on the podcast platforms. Now, more than a year later, the former county deputy Sean Grayson has been found guilty of second-degree murder in her death, a verdict that raises many questions as it answers. We are digging deep into this, and who else better to help us dig deep into it than defense attorney and host of Defense Diaries, Bob Mata. We're going to talk about how this system meant to serve and protect instead failed at nearly every turn in this case, and we're going to figure out what the hell went wrong, or if the system, it's just kind of working as directed, working under the confines of the wheels and the tracks that are already laid for it. Bob, welcome.
Thanks, this
is another crazy one. We've all seen the video. We're not going to play it again. So if anybody's triggered, don't worry. We're not going to do that. This is one where we got the verdict just the other week. What was your reaction to finding out second degree murder on this?
I was outraged. I thought that, because the way that this thing went down was he was only charged with first degree. Mm-hmm. So, and he was never indicted on second degree, but second degree is a lesser included offense in Illinois. This one happened in my neck of the woods. And, ultimately the jury, in what I feel was a compromise verdict, ultimately landed on second degree. And, and when I say a compromise verdict, that means that ultimately I have a feeling that there was a little bit of a divide in the jury room with maybe one or two people in terms of wanting to convict him on the first degree. I think that there were probably a couple of holdouts that were like, well, she lifted up the pot. She lifted up the pot. Mm-hmm. And, he had to do what he had to do type shit. And ultimately they end up landing on second degree, which carries a much less severe penalty. The range goes from anywhere from 4 years to 20 years on that. But the thing that is most disconcerting about it is the fact that the guy can actually get probation, meaning that they could say, all right, judge says I'm going to sentence you to 4 years, but I'm not going to put you in. I'm gonna put you on reporting probation, and you know, so provided you don't screw up, you're not going in. So I mean, that could happen. Like the guy could be given probation. You know, which when you look at this thing, and I'm glad we're not showing the video because it is a very triggering video.
It's disturbing.
It's fucked up, you know.
Yeah. And let's kind of walk through for people who don't know what happened here, essentially, and step in if I'm misstating anything. She calls the police. She thinks there might be somebody outside her home. She's concerned. Maybe it's a burglar. Maybe you don't know, but you're concerned. So you call 911. They show up. We've seen the body cam footage in its entirety. It's like 18 minutes if you watch the whole thing. And it starts out a fairly, you know, civil interaction. She does seem a little elusive at first. You know, I don't know what's going on with her exactly, but I don't know. I mean, how would you describe, in your view, what the heck's going on there in terms of when they start interacting with her, her hesitance to really say much of what's going on? You know, she didn't seem like she was quite there. In no way am I sticking up for shooting her. I'm just trying to determine, was there probably a mental health emergency going on or something, do you think?
Yeah, there was unequivocally a mental health thing going on with her.
Yeah.
I mean, it came out that her her mother had made a call in a couple of days prior because she was having an episode. She's suffering from some kind of mental illness to the point where she ends up, and I'm talking about Sonia herself, checks herself in. Mm-hmm. The day before into a 30-day to kind of figure out what's going on with her. She's either having paranoia, you know, and when the mother had called law enforcement to let them know that they were going to, you know, that she was going to be going in, and she says this thing that is in retrospect very kind of haunting, in the sense that she says, you know, please don't hurt her. Please don't hurt her. She's going through some mental health issues.
They're warned. They're told.
Right.
She's going through mental health issues.
They are absolutely, like, whether or not these two guys are made aware of the fact, but when you watch the lengthy video, when you watch the lengthier video, and they've got his partner going out there, and he says something about it seems like it was a 1096, which is she's got some kind of mental distress going on. You know that they could tell just by the way that she was acting that she was having some kind of an issue. And you know, because like when they first come to the door, she's acting straight. First of all, it takes her a long time to answer the door, right?
Yes.
You got this cop. So the cop, Grayson's already irritated by the fact that he's standing out there for 2 or 3 minutes waiting for her to open the door. It's like, what took you so long to open the door? You know, she's like, well, I was getting dressed, and you know, I mean, so ultimately, you know, this weird interaction takes place, you know, and she starts, you know, she can hear her when they're at the front door, you know, saying some things like, you know, God help me, God help me.
There's a lot of religiosity being thrown into.
And then ultimately, you know, they start asking questions about the car in the driveway. Whose is that? You know, and she gives some kind of strange answer initially. And then ultimately, when his partner goes to walk down the driveway to look, you can still see on his body cam that Grayson's still at the door. So we know, Grayson doesn't have his body-worn cam on at that time. Mm-hmm. He doesn't turn it on until after the shooting occurs, and then he flips it on. So the partner is walking down, and you can see Grayson go into the house.
Mm-hmm.
So unfortunately, I don't know if he just barged his way in or if she invited him in terms of him coming into the home, because that thing was so close to being over.
Yeah.
You know, once they checked the perimeter of the house, or like, there's nothing out here.
Yeah. Cause you almost think this is it. Like what more can possibly happen here?
Right. Right. So ultimately, you know, I mean, he ends up in the house, you know, she's sitting down, she's trying to find paperwork and, you know, and she's trying to find the stuff to where she was, you know, hospitalized, that she went in with the mental health issues. And, you know, I mean, the bottom line is that there had been 3 911 calls made by or on behalf of Sonia. Her mother had actually called them and specifically said that her daughter was experiencing a mental breakdown and then pleaded with them. Like, this is part of the, this is the record. It's a 911 call. He says, I don't want you guys to hurt her. So it's like, there's this premonition that, you know, that this is how these things get dealt with by cops who are not trained to handle mental health issues when they
Let me interrupt you for just a second here. So we know that she has a previous mental health history, and I've sat in a dispatch area before. I'm not sure if things are flagged like this address. We've got somebody here with a mental illness or something. But knowing that the mother said this, and again, we don't know if the officers knew that there was a mental health crisis going on here. But let's just say they did know.
Yeah.
Couldn't they, instead of going in with, you know, firearms out, how about the stun gun?
Well, that's what Allison, we did a live on this the other night where, as you can imagine, Allison and I were raging.
Right.
But I mean, that's the thing, right? I mean, like, why aren't you pulling out the stun gun? You know, like, why
deadly
you,
force?
Mace, exactly. Pepper spray, something. I mean,
anything other than something that would kill her and eliminate her from this earth.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, and I mean, that's the $1 million question. I mean, to me, that's always the question. Mm-hmm. You know, like, why are we defaulting? Why are these cops defaulting to killing people as opposed to, you know, using the stun gun and, you know, like dropping them right there and you're not ending up murdering somebody?
I think the answer is quite simple, because the system is working as it's been created. We're putting unqualified people into positions where they have to essentially be a mental health professional with zero mental health training and expecting them to react in a way that doesn't end tragically.
Yeah.
And that, I think, at the end of the day is this. I mean, and this officer, and we can go in a little bit, obviously already checked the boxes of, I don't have very good emotional regulation. I don't make good decisions. I've been fired this place. I've had to resign here. I've been discharged. I mean, the list goes on and on. The guy's not good at assessing situations and handling them in any way, shape, or form that seems to make any sort of sense, that de-escalates. Yeah. We can get into that again, like I said, in a little bit. But again, it's working as designed. When you put people into positions that are not qualified or trained to handle them properly, shit's going to go bad.
Yeah.
And it doesn't excuse it, but it's, why is anyone surprised?
The gun is so easy to pull out and use. And that's what concerns me. In some of the martial arts classes that I'm in, there are some police officers who are present. They are learning so that they can de-escalate a situation manually before they have to pull out their weapon. They've got it handy and boy, they can get to it, but they try other things first. And that's just where I am. I don't know how things were working in this area, but it seems a little bit of a knee-jerk reaction to go, oh, pull the gun, shoot, done.
Yeah. Well,
case closed.
No question about it. No question about it.
That's what we have all the time though.
I mean, that's how they're trained. And look, the reality is, you know, cops have a tough job.
Yeah.
Yep. They absolutely do.
It's a dangerous, thankless job. They're out there, you know, with all the shit that's been going down in the last decade. You know, I would not say that the police are beloved per se in general. It's not to say that people who have husbands and spouses that are cops, that, you know, obviously they love them. And I love good cops. I love good cops. The problem is that when you have that much power that is being given to an individual, and I'm talking about that badge and that gun, which is so much power that you can change the course of somebody's life, not even necessarily just killing them, arresting somebody because you're in a shit mood because they've irritated you, and then you say, oh, you know what, they grabbed my wrist, that's aggravated battery on a police officer, that's in Illinois, that's a class 4 felony. They have so much power to alter people's lives that it is incumbent upon everybody that is in a position to hire these people that the psychological evaluations that are done on these people is so thorough that we know exactly who we're getting into these jobs. And the problem is they're underpaid.
Yep.
You know, you're not going to be getting the best of the best. Mm-hmm. You know, the best of the best are going to say, oh, you know, I went to Harvard or I went to Yale and I want to get into law enforcement. I'm going to the feds. Mm-hmm. You know, they pay better. It's a more prestigious job. I don't want to be out on the streets doing it. So you've got all of these issues that are going on in terms of the hiring process, wherein once they're out there and they have that power, and if they haven't really evaluated them properly so that you don't know who you're putting out on the streets, it is a very dangerous proposition because you were talking about people that are going to be experiencing heated events a lot. And if they're a person that cannot handle that kind of event in any way, shape, or form, and they're not trained properly to de-escalate, or if they have a bias, if they're a person that walks down the street and are like, oh, you know, there's a person with black skin, I'm going to cross the other side of the street. But if they saw a person walking, you know, towards them, a person with white skin, that they wouldn't. So they have that kind of like little bias just kind of floating in their mind, you know, that it's not necessarily racism, but it's just a bias. Mm-hmm. Like those people can't be hired to be cops. You know, there's the psychological side of testing that needs to be completely overhauled is where it has to start. It has
we
to
don't,
be.
We don't.
I know.
We don't. We know what the problems are here. I mean, at the end of the day, it's not, well, there's some bad apples. No, it's not. It's we're setting everyone up to fail. And you're making bad apples nuclear bombs, essentially, is what you're doing.
Yeah.
You can have a great cop that, and I'm not saying this guy is a great, so I don't want anybody to construe that, but you can have a great cop that can make a bad decision because of lack of training and lack of experience and lack of being set. And anyone put in any position, if you are not training them and then saying, here, go, like, we don't put therapists and qualify therapists to help people if they have no training in therapy, unless you're in Utah, then it's a different story. You can basically, the Mormon church says you're good. I'm kidding. Anyway, but no, that's the thing. We don't do this in other areas. Why are we doing this here? I mean, 99% of the job is psychological. It's right. Dealing with mental health problems of people, which is why they're in the position of needing to call 911 because something horrible happened. Somebody made a bad choice. Some sort of accident happened. And it comes back to mental health. And that's a majority of the problems and the calls and the reasons. And we do nothing to train them. I'm sure there's some lovely department out there, or maybe a handful that do, but that will come down to budget. That will come down to who's qualified to take these positions. And what we have here in this case was Sean Grayson here, who was let go from other policing jobs, resigned. Six agencies in 4 years.
Yeah,
clearly,
that's a problem.
Not great. But because I'm going to assume here, because they needed a body in that position, they needed to fill that quota. We need somebody here to hit this beat and to be able to do the job. We're basically going to hire anybody that can remotely fill that void, and that's what they did. And when you hire bodies, when you hire people just to fill that body space that you need, you end up with body counts.
Yep.
And that's what they got.
Yep.
And yet, this is everywhere. This is almost every department in the United States. Why can't we fix this? Where would it start to fix this?
We have a great comment. Pardon my interruption, but it's exactly what you're talking about. There is no mental health to care for these people, period. This is from Philip Murphy. So police are spending far too much time dealing with this, sad as it is, period. We need mental health available. I'm a nurse and have seen this far too often. They go to emergency and back on the street with family unable to deal with them, then back to emergency revolving door with no care. I saw this as an EMT back in 2016. People where they're seeing, they're hallucinating, they're seeing things, mm-hmm. take them to emergency. And then 2 days later, we get the same call. They're back. They're back home doing yeah. exactly the same thing. Nothing happened. They went to emergency. They were dealt with for the day and then released. And there's nothing you can do. They just keep calling. They are
repeat offenders. It's just a cycle. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's a spot on comment, you know, and from the defense attorney's perspective, I'm on the front lines of it far more mm-hmm. than, you know, the prosecutors are, because like I'm dealing with the folks, and it was for the 2 decades plus that I was trying cases and handling these cases in court and trying to go in and have discussions with these prosecutors to make them understand that almost everything that is walking through those doors is either related to either addiction and or mental health issues or both, combination yeah. of both. And to have them simply not recognize that and just ignore that fact was so frustrating. It's a systemic issue.
Yeah.
And we, like, our society is not getting better mental health.
No.
We are getting worse and worse and worse. It's like these phones that we're all on, like everything is snowballing to where if you just walk out in any major city, you are going to see it's like The Walking Dead, where you have people that are just wandering around.
It is
in a state of just mental distress and mental yeah. illness that is like coursing through their minds, wherein they cannot tell the difference between reality and what is going on in their mind. There is no way for them to be able to control that. It's mental illness isn't treated the way that we treat other injuries. If you break your fucking arm, you go to the hospital. They put a cast on after yeah. they take an X-ray. They set the bone. And because we can't see the brain, because you can't see the injury, it doesn't get treated in the same way that all of the other injuries that we always treat. Oh, I'm kind of feeling like shit, around my stomach area. Oh, maybe your appendix is, whatever the case may be, everything mm-hmm. else gets treated in a way that is effective. And mm-hmm. what's not happening with mental health is it's not getting treated. And to Stacy's point and to our comment there is nothing in place in terms of the system to where these folks that are experiencing incredibly vivid mm-hmm. hallucinations of what may be going on in their mind, but it's real to them in real
it
life.
It is.
And like when people don't know how to deal, like including their family members, like yeah. Forget about the cops. Like the people yeah. that are closest to them don't know how to deal with it.
Which is why they've called the police in most cases.
And the power is with the ill. The power is with the sick person, the person yes. who has the issue. Because the way that our system is currently set up, that person in most cases needs to be the one that says, I'll get help. I need help.
Right.
And more times than not, statistically, that person doesn't think there's anything wrong. And a family member, a loved one, especially someone who's not living with that person, they don't have the authority to go and say, this person needs to be in this hospital. They need to go into a mental health hospital. We don't have that ability anymore. And if they're there, it's a very small hold and then release, because we are not equipped to do this. Everything has been put down to a local jurisdiction level. That's why we don't have state mental hospitals anymore. And that's a whole other right. conversation of either they're mm-hmm. great or they were horrible or somewhere mixed in between. But we've never revisited this idea since they got rid of all of them. And then lo and behold, you have this massive homeless problem and all of these people who are mentally ill on the streets. Gee, I wonder how that happened.
Yeah.
And it's been getting worse and worse over the several decades since we got rid of state mental health hospitals. And the reliance was, well, locally they'll deal with it. No, they won't.
If no, they won't.
Budget
they
to don't. Do so, or they're not going to. That's
how
why
are
we
you
have.
Dealing with it? What does that mean? The local
exactly.
don't deal with it on the local level. It
means here, we're going to put you in this low-income housing over here, maybe, if you can get into it. If not, we're just going to let you wander around the streets talking to your basketball like it's a baby. And
Tony, you just
we know exactly what we're talking about. And yes. Yeah, because yeah, we had... Yep.
I'm not going to go into great detail, but across from our radio station, we had, I'm not going to say low income housing, but it was housing for people who had maybe been institutionalized and then released.
Why? Because the institution shut down.
Exactly. Yep. And there wasn't a lot of oversight. So these people would cross the street and come over to the radio station and kind of sit in the parking lot. And there just wasn't anything going on for them. There wasn't any structure, nobody watching over them. They were basically on their own and shouldn't have been. And they just congregated in our parking lot. It was very unsettling.
Yeah, that's the personal example I have of seeing that exact thing where the institution's gone. Good luck out on the streets. And yeah, these people, they were in their delusion land because of their mental illnesses that were going on. And again, we have exactly what you're saying. We don't do anything in our country. We treat it like, oh, just brush it off. Take a little Tussin, walk it off.
Right.
And you'll be good.
Yeah, rub some dirt on it. You'll be good. You know, and like we could talk about this for 10 hours.
I know.
But I mean, like another issue with it is, a lot of people that are initially treated and they're able to diagnose, say they have paranoid schizophrenia, and they're given medication. And a prevailing issue is that almost everybody that starts taking the medication, which works, which for things like where they're able to accurately diagnose, because there is, and I was actually just talking to a mental health professional on Saturday night. I had a really lengthy conversation with her, and she's a forensic psychologist nurse. And you know, she was telling me, she's like, look, you know, when they come in, there's an aspect of it where it's a bit of a guessing game in terms of how we try to medicate them, you know, because they're coming in and we're trying to diagnose what we believe is wrong with them in terms of what the DSM may you know, provide us in terms of kind of background, and these are the things that you need to look for. But like once we diagnose them, and if we find, you know, through, you know, trial and tribulation, what may be working in terms of medication, and then it does work. What happens with a lot of people that are suffering from mental illness, when they're on their meds and they realize that it's working, they think that they've been healed, not realizing that they haven't been healed, that that's not what it does. The medication doesn't heal you. It resolves the issue, but you have to keep taking the meds. What happens is they get off the meds because they may not necessarily like the way that it makes them feel in certain ways.
Or they feel fine when they're on it. So they think, I don't need it.
They're healed.
Yeah.
And there's no one there to make sure.
It's like a vicious cycle, man. And it's really frustrating.
And there's so many obvious pitfalls as to how this won't work. And it's like, well, we got to let it happen. No, this is insane. We're letting people just basically kill themselves slowly but surely because we don't want to take responsibility in one way or another. We're talking about the case against Sean Grayson, who was found guilty of second degree murder. This is the one in Springfield, Illinois, where the officers visited the woman with the pot of boiling water that he claims thought, oh my gosh, she's going to throw this at me, even though they said you might want to take that off the burner over there. I mean, it's utterly insane. Let's talk earlier. We were talking about first degree murder versus second degree murder. He was found guilty and charged with first degree, found guilty on second degree murder on the lesser charge. 4 to 20 years basically is what that is. There is a possibility of parole that could take place here. First degree murder to the layperson, what I would think about it would be, well, premeditated. I don't think Sean Grayson walked into, you know, was outside that house going, I'm going to shoot her. I can't wait to get in there and take her out.
Well, this is where I want to correct you.
Yes. And this is why you're here. This is why I'm bringing this up, so you can straighten that understanding out.
Yeah. So premeditation can happen in a matter of moments. Okay. Like the concept that people have to be plotting some shit is not how premeditation works.
Okay.
So as a matter of fact, when she says the thing about, Jesus rebukes you or whatever she says, and then he turns around and says, you better not, like, I'll shoot you in your fucking face. That's premeditation. Like that in and of itself, it shows that that had already entered his mind. And okay. What does he do? He shoots her in her face.
Yeah.
So like that amount of time, premeditation can happen in that short of amount of time. Okay. And so first degree, the difference is, and I'll read you what kind of the statute is. It's intended to kill or do great bodily harm, or knew that his actions would cause great death or bodily harm and acted without lawful justification. So that was where probably a couple of people were hung up, because his attorney, and I'm talking about Grayson's attorney, probably did a halfway decent job selling the jurors on the concept that, okay, well, she had the pot, you know, she had the pot, she was going to throw the water at him. And like, so then second degree in Illinois is where the defendant acts under a sudden and intense passion resulting from serious provocation, or that the defendant believed that their actions were justified, like self-defense, but that belief was unreasonable. So that's where they got him on that. So, they landed on the fact that they believed that Grayson believed that his actions were justified, but the jury came to the conclusion that, okay, we're buying the fact that you believed that she was going to throw that hot water at you, but that belief was unreasonable. Therefore, we're finding you guilty of the second degree. All right. So that's where this whole thing lies. All right. And, and it's that concept of, I mean, I watched the video. Okay. And I was telling Allison, I'm like, let's go test this. I'm going to stand on the other side of the island. And I like, you don't have to have boiling water, but I'm going to give you a pot that size. And I want to see if you can hit me with the fucking water from 10 feet away. All right. Like I want to do this, because as far as I'm concerned, you just take a step back or to the side and you're not getting hit by hot water.
There's so many things he could have done.
He goes towards her.
Right. He goes towards the number one. She wasn't even talking about the water. She wasn't bringing up the water. They brought up the water. You got something on the stove over there. So what does she do? She takes it off and she's heading towards the sink, which actually happens to be towards where the officers are. The officers continue to move towards the boiling water.
Right.
If you're concerned about this, back the fuck up.
Right.
Aren't they taught to back away from a threat?
Yeah. You already clearly are aware that this woman is not in her right mind, that things aren't great. So there is the distinct chance that she may make a horrible choice and throw water. That could possibly happen. I get that idea running through one's mind, but why are you going towards it? Why are you, I mean, and then the other possibility here, other than taser, other than pepper spray, other than 50 other things that he could have done, when you shoot, why are we going for a headshot?
Right.
You're point blank range. Why don't you shoot her arm or just somewhere, leg, somewhere, some non-fatal shot.
Anywhere
three times.
She's gonna drop a pot.
Anything.
She gets shot on her person.
Shoot the pot.
Shoot the pot. But that's the thing. Like when you watch that video very closely and it's a little grainy, she does go over to try to pour the hot water out into the sink. That's when he screams, I'm going to fuck. And that's when she says the rebuke thing. He claims he doesn't know what that means. Like this fucking moron doesn't know what the word rebuke means. He's like, he thinks it was a threat, which it wasn't. and then he says, I'm going to shoot you in the fucking face thing. So while she's in the process of dumping the water in the sink, she drops down to the ground. And then he's screaming at her. And then she stands up. And if you watch, she's got the pot in front of where he said he was going to shoot her, which is her fucking face.
She's shielding.
Right. I mean, she was never throwing the pot of water at this guy.
And then she gets on the ground. You hear her, from what it sounds like to me, it's like, I'm sorry. And then he fires.
Yeah.
She's on the ground. The pot's down on the ground with her. And then he shoots downwards towards the woman who's already cowering in fear. And this is somehow okay. You know, we talk about the mental health, obviously. This woman obviously experiencing a mental health emergency. What about the mental abilities of Sean Grayson?
That's what I want to talk about.
Yeah. Because
that's what I mean, about
yeah, I mean, are they not screening at all for like these people? Like, clearly, I don't think Sean Grayson is mentally stable enough. Considering you lost 6 jobs in 4 years,
sociopath. Yeah, let me go through it real quick.
So let's do it.
August of 22, July of 2021, he works for the Pawnee Police Department part time, and from February of 2021 to May of 2021. He gets hired on part-time at the Kincaid Police Department. From May 21 to December of 2021, he gets hired part-time at the Verdon Police Department. These are all little towns around the area. Mm-hmm. From July 21st until May 20 of 2022, he works full-time for the Auburn Police Department. He shit-canned there, or he quits, whatever happens. And then May of 2022 to April of 2023, he gets another full-time job at the Logan County Sheriff's Office. And then finally, whatever happens there, he's discharged, he quits, whatever. In May of 2023 to 2024, Sagamon County Sheriff's Office hires him full-time. So that's 6 agencies in 4 years, but it's worse than that. This fucking guy has 2 DUI convictions, okay? 2 DUI convictions. You can't even get into fucking Canada with a DUI conviction. This guy has not one, but 2 convictions for DUIs, and he's continually being hired on by law enforcement.
How is that happening?
I don't know. I don't know.
And I don't know, because, I mean, obviously, it seems every state's different in this. And maybe you know the answer to this, maybe you don't. I don't know. Does the records follow the officers from place to place as to why you were fired, why you quit, why you were let go, whatever the hell happened? Or is it kind of like the school district system?
The medical system, like doctors. Yeah.
Like that, or the Catholic Church or everything else where we shield everybody from their former fuck-ups.
Exactly. So I don't know the answer to that. But they call it like a wandering officer. Like that's a cop who bounces from department to department.
They have wandering teachers too. We've talked about that.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
So, you know, and if they get forced out for misconduct, but they're not formally terminated, it doesn't fucking follow them. That's where they give them the little pat on the butt and say, okay, well, you know, we could either formally shit can you, which it's going to have to be written up and it's going to be put in the system, or you could just fucking quit and walk away. And then we don't have to do it. And then when they're doing that, and this guy was also discharged from the Army for misconduct.
Well, and there's the biggest red flag of all.
It's crazy. He was characterized as general under honorable conditions, but the reason was serious misconduct. So, I mean, like, this guy is just not the ilk of human being that you want out there with that kind of power, that gun and that badge that I was talking about earlier. It is way too much power for a person that is unhinged or having some kind of problems. And if he served, I don't know if he was in the shit. You know, I mean, if he was in the shit and he's a veteran, like, he's probably suffering from PTSD, because that's a fucking nightmare. War is hell.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
Like that's a real fucking thing. Like, you can't send all these young men and women over like overseas into a foreign country to start fucking killing people and then have them come back and expect them to be completely normal. It changes the psyche of your like everything that you knew is now changed based on the fact that somebody told you that it was okay to go over because it was for country. You know, and go over and kill people, and some of them are killing a lot of people. Some of them are watching their friends being killed, and it's like you can't come back from that not being harmed.
No,
like you can't. Like, so, like, I have a huge amount of respect for veterans, and I also understand that that's a real fucking thing. So I don't know if that went on with this dude, but if it did, you know, it helps explain things. But man, like, this guy just should never have been a cop. Like, I mean, that's bottom lining it. It's bottom lining it.
And he got to be one over and over and over again. And I let me ask you this. Can he become a cop again?
I mean, no. At this point, no. Like you'd have to be fucking... You'd have to be begging for your department to be sued fucking upside down and backwards if you were to... Because he's been convicted now of a major felony. Nah, he... not a chance, you know, but okay. The guy who hired him before he was hired at Sagamon was like, he literally asked the question. He's like, you've been in five different agencies, man. Like, and you've been here 7 months. Like, how are you here? His boss asked him that, like, how are you fucking working here? I mean, like, the two DUIs is like a major red flag on top of the fact that, like, how this guy was getting you know what it boils down to is exactly what Tony said. They need fucking warm bodies.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Obviously.
That's what they did. They're not having a qualified pool of individuals because of the pay, because of the danger associated with the job. It's not an attractive job. And now when you compile that with the fact that you know, police officers take all kinds of shit, you know, because of the bad apples. Mm-hmm. So the good ones take shit because of the bad apples, you know, and the whole department is shit upon. And, you know, and it's a shame because, like I said, we need good police officers. Mm-hmm. We need them.
Yeah. You know, and then as communities, it's like, well, let's defund it. Yeah, defund it. That's a great, it's the same genius idea that we have in our school system, which is currently how it works. The worse you are, the less assistance you get.
Yeah.
the less educated your children, the worse homes they come out from, the more you would think, well, if there's a problem at any other point in life, you're like, these people need some help. Like, let's help them get educated. Let's try and fill in the blanks a little bit where the levels are low over here. And that will ultimately take some more money and some more funding to get more educators and to get more people here to help those people along. No. In America, what we do is we say, oh, well, you're failing. Let's take the little scraps you have left and get rid of that too. Oh, let's test all these kids. They're not testing well enough. Well, proving is right. You don't deserve more. That's how the education system works in America, kids. I'm not exaggerating. No, that is literally how it works. That's essentially what we're doing as a society in our who we're voting for and the people that we're electing to make choices as far as how we're funding our police departments, how we're funding all of our first responders and things of this nature. We're saying, oh, we're angry at you. Let's not fund the problem to get help and educate the problem. We're like, take that shit away. What happens? You make it worse, dipshits. If we decided to go, let's go for somebody who's going to educate our people better, educate our officers better. Let's make sure that they're getting the training that they need for our existing ones. Let's up the pay. Maybe that'll increase the odds of getting qualified individuals in. And look, the officers here are getting training and they're treated well and they're treated right. You know what happens when you do that sort of shit? Crime goes down. There's less problems because you have a system that's functioning. It's not trying to emotionally and decay itself from the inside out. Because it's not being fed. And that's essentially what we have going on in our education system, in our law enforcement system, in so many systems. We ignore the problems, we don't treat the problems, and then we starve the problems, thinking it's going to help our problems, and it makes more problems.
Yeah. Yeah. Sticking the head in the sand is never the right approach.
Yeah.
there's no question about that. And, you know, like the concept of, like what you were just talking about in terms of the training, you know, and I think that, you know, that you can call 988, right? And that, like, mm-hmm. Like what really needs to happen is in these situations where it's clear, like if you had a social worker or a mental health worker that was either with the cops or like, all right, we got to call, you know, we need a mental health professional over there kind of like assisting with the cops to kind of to be able to decompress everybody that's at the scene. And we, you know, it's like, cause the cops just aren't equipped to do it. And frankly, you know, they're not going in to be mental health workers.
No.
You know, when you get that job, like they have enough shit to do.
Yeah.
Cops have enough shit to do. Their job is dangerous enough to where I don't think we need to be piling that on to their list of chores that they need to do, their list of responsibilities when they get to a scene. But when we have an idea, like if it's a domestic, right? Like, you know, there's something going on where probably a mental health professional coming along with the law enforcement would be very helpful to de-escalate a situation in a domestic situation. Or if you got somebody where it's a family member calling and it's clear that it's a mental health issue, you know, you're sending somebody in that is qualified to handle that, to de-escalate, to maybe get that person calmed down. Because when you've got somebody who, say, is a paranoid schizophrenic and you're coming in and you're fucking screaming at them, you are not making things better. You are making things worse in that person's mind. You are one of the people that they think is out to get them, you know, and that's the reality. That's just not the approach that you take in these types of situations. So, I mean, I think that there's ways that we can do it. It's like you said, though, man, the fucking funding, the funding, they're just not willing to put the money into it because, you know, it's considered more of kind of like a socialist type of thing, man. Like anytime you're talking about social programs, whether it's our public schools, whether it's police, fire, you know, anything that is considered where we're pooling money and we're using public funds in order to sustain it, it's, you know, it becomes a fucking political football when it shouldn't be. And it should be a human thing.
Yeah.
Because we should all give a fuck, because at the end of the day, it makes our country a better place to live.
Well, either we do this and we put value on this, or everyone's just in you're going to have very specific sects where everybody just has private security because the public got so defunded and so corrupted and so messed up that it's not safe to, they're not trustworthy. And I'm not saying we're there right now. In some areas, I feel like we are, but this is insane. I mean, if we want to have a functioning society, we have to fund the areas that are important, that protect us, our education, our police, our fire. But we somehow think that these are the areas that deserve the least amount of attention. And I don't know how the hell we have that mental block and why we think that way, but that is a majority of how our country seems to function. Or they just don't want to deal with it and they don't want to think about it because it's an icky thought. And then if you have to think about that, you got to think about all the decisions you might have made and the people that you voted for and the choices that, and you might start feeling bad about that. So we just kind of push it off into the corner because it's someone else's problem.
Yeah,
it's hard to look in the mirror when you have your head in the sand.
It is. And you know, and until it affects you personally in some way,
yeah,
like that's the fucking thing here. Until you have one of those things that you just discussed impact you in a negative way to where you're like, oh, okay, now I see what the fucking problem is. People are just oblivious to it. We are very much a society that we're able to kind of ignore all the shit that's going on if it's not directly affecting us, because that's just how we're built.
You know, we've been able to for quite a long time in our country, kind of, you know, if you're not in that environment, if that's not the atmosphere, the ecosystem that you're in, you know, people have been able to. But I feel like that's shifting. I don't leave my house half the time. when I do, I go out and I'm like, yeah, this is why I don't leave my house.
Yeah.
Because it feels like it is slowly, I think more frequent, more fastly eroding than ever before, the enormous mental health crisis that is going on in every facet of our society. Go to the store, go to the mall, if you can find one that still exists, go to wherever, and you will run into at least one person or situation you're going, they need some help.
Yeah.
Guaranteed. And usually multiple variations of it to varying degrees every time you leave your home. It didn't used to be like that. It used to be like, remember that one time I was out and I saw this happen, or this, like, it's every fucking day now.
Yeah.
It's like, there's a problem.
And it's affecting our kids, T.
Yes.
We're not just talking about fucking adults.
Yeah.
We're talking about kids, 10, 11, 12, teenager. It is rampant. Yeah. It is a fucking absolute crisis that is just being ignored in a way that it's like you said, man, you can't go out without running into somebody where you're seeing just clear mental illness and you know, whether they're talking to themselves or they're wandering around aimlessly or they're begging for money or they're an addict. Like, especially if you go into, like, I live out in the burbs. And I still see it. But when I go down, I was in the city this weekend for Halloween, went to a couple of concerts, man, it is everywhere.
Yep.
It is everywhere. In all of our heads are so far up our asses with these fucking things, man.
Yeah.
Like these fucking things, I'm putting a huge amount of the blood. Those need to go away. We need to reconnect as human beings. Mm-hmm. And like we really do. Like this is like we are living in the weirdest time that I can even possibly imagine. It's like a fucking science fiction novel. You know what
it
I mean?
Is.
Like it doesn't feel real. Like you can't have a conversation with anybody.
You hear people use phrases like, "Are we living in a simulation?" And like, and it's like, I don't think we are, but I get the reference.
But it feels like it.
It feels like there's like we're the fucking Sims, and there's some asshole teenager up there with his mouse going, "I'm going to start this shit on fire for you today."
I mean
it's just what are we looking at in the comments right now, Stacey? What are people saying?
Oh, lots of great stuff. Gen Z, I get your name. This is wonderful. Gen Z 367. She says, female. My brother is schizophrenic. Tony, you're entirely correct, Bob, about how they take their medication. They feel better and then they stop. My mom has to take him once a month for a shot. She has to plan her entire life and vacations and everything around it because if he doesn't get his shot, then he goes off the rails. So there's a family that's actually taking accountability and
few and far between.
It really is.
And the thing is, even families who want to take accountability, who try to take accountability, at the end of the day, it's up to that person with the illness to allow them into their life. That person has every right to say, "No, you can't help me. I'm going to do it myself." There's nothing to force that person to take those medications.
Right.
There's nothing to force that person to get help until they've self-destructed in some way, shape, or form that hurts themselves or others while we sit here and wait and watch them to do so. And I mean, it's so good that's going on, that this is a dynamic in that family where at least mom is there and that your brother allows mom to come in and help, because there's so many cases where families, they literally have to give up because they're pushed away by the government, by the way the rules are of like, well, you can't force your way in there. You can't do this. You can't do that. Well, they're going to die. Well, we get this. This is how it works.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's how it works.
Frustrating, man. It's frustrating and scary.
It is. Scary.
Yeah, without a doubt. Coming up January 29th is going to be the sentencing hearing. What are you expecting, Bob?
Well, my fear is that they're going to give him the low end, you know, that they're going to give him 4 years. And, you know, I plan on going down there and I want to make sure the judge, you know, because if you listen to her folks, Sonia's parents, that they gave a little press conference afterwards, I recommend everybody listen to that. It kind of puts it into perspective in terms of, you know, what the right thing to do here is. You know, Tony, if that was me that walked into that house and I'm not wearing a fucking gun and a badge, I guarantee you that I am convicted on first degree murder. I don't give a fuck what that guy's job was. He murdered her in cold blood.
Mm-hmm.
A woman that he called, that was called to his house or to her house to help her. And that was the end result. And it's not that complicated. Like they could try to make that 10 seconds seem like whatever it is. But I mean, that guy killed her in cold blood. She was no threat, you know.
And the reality is, and this is, I'm not trying to sound cold or callous, the guy's track record, if it wasn't going to be her,
somebody else.
Yep, someone else.
It was a matter of time. He's one call away from making a horrible, horrible decision. Because number one, he wasn't qualified to do the job he was doing. And if that safeguard would have been in place, we wouldn't be having this conversation about this guy specifically today.
100%.
Yeah. Your thoughts in the comments section. Be sure to leave them and let us know your thoughts, and be sure to press subscribe wherever you are downloading podcasts so you don't miss any of our coverage of this and the many cases that we follow right here. Bob's podcast, Defense Diaries, and the Buried. Where are we at on that right now? The Gacy.
It's doing great. Buried inside the John Wayne Gacy investigation, where it's doing well. Still got to keep getting it out there. Got to keep people that listen to it, make sure that you're giving it a rating and a review. make sure you're following. I'm really excited about it. I'm actually having Michael Chernas come on the show, the guy who played Gacy.
Yeah.
So, you know, I thought he did a fabulous job, and I had had the opportunity to interview him with you on your show, and that was exciting. And we'll probably get a little bit more into the weeds.
Because
he won't have somebody behind the scenes saying you got 45
Five
minutes.
Seconds. Right. Yeah.
Got to move on.
So
what
yeah,
would be but, really yeah. fascinating? Have you tried this? Have you tried to get the gentleman on who played your dad?
I he followed me on Instagram, so I'm actually going to hit him up too. Yeah, Michael Usper.
That would be fascinating. Yeah.
Yeah.
Check that out. Has have all the episodes dropped now on your series Unburied?
No, man. We just dropped episode 9 today. We're slow playing it.
Yeah.
But we're dropping 3 episodes a week. Yeah. Kind of like the mind blowing thing that we ended up discovering in terms of our investigation has been going on in these last 3 episodes. It's a great podcast. It's different than anything else people have listened to, and it's worth their time. So hopefully they'll check it out.
Buried.
And technical note for those of you who love a podcast, who love something on YouTube, always hit that like button. It shoves your favorite podcast show whatever into the algorithm, so hit that like button.
Yep. Yes, right. Please. Here, hit it right here. Always like, share, subscribe. It really helps all of our channels out. So
it does. So
and it's free. It's free to do.
Exactly.
It takes doesn't 2 seconds. Cost a damn thing.
Yeah. Exactly. All right. So until next time, for Bob, for Todd, for Stacy, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Extra Value Meals are back. For just $5, get a savory and sweet sausage, egg, and cheese McGriddles, plus hash browns and a coffee. Only at McDonald's.
For limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. Prices may be higher in Hawaii, Alaska, and California, and for delivery.